Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, January 14th, 2016. It's just before 4 UTC as we're starting recording today. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And this is our first regular show in a few weeks. So there's like, you know, a huge backlog of stuff that happened the last few weeks that we haven't talked about yet. But I figure we're going to, of course, hit election 2016. There's stuff going on both on the Republican and Democratic side right now. And of course, we're I think it's 19 days from the Iowa caucus now. Maybe even slightly less. I don't know. I can't count. But we're getting very close. We're only, you know, between 2 and 3 weeks away. And so there's stuff going on there. And then I figure we just shove everything else into a lightning round and see how that goes. Because, you know, I've got a lot of other little things to talk about, but none of them really, when I look through them, I'm like, do I really want to spend 15 minutes on that? And no.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you the first question. Did you buy your Powerball ticket?
So I believe my wife did for this latest round. That was on my list for the lightning round. But we can talk, you know, $1.5 billion lottery in intro if you want. My policy is, despite completely knowing, you know, all the mathematics of it and that you're basically giving away money, you know, yeah, when it gets like this, we'll buy like 20 bucks worth.
All right. There was a guy in the New York Times who wrote this article saying you aren't going to win. Look, here's a reality. Somebody is going to win. All right. Okay. Is there a low probability that it is you? Yes. But saying that the answer is no, you're not going to win. The answer is, well, it's just not true.
Well, yeah. Well, somebody. Yes, somebody who reads that article may in fact be the winner. However, yes. you got to think when you say you are not going to X, you know, at some point you never mean zero.
This guy was absolutely saying zero.
No, what I'm saying is there is no such thing as any event for which the probability is actually zero. So there's a certain threshold at which saying it ain't going to happen is.
Well, come on. Well, there are the limits some of things language, that have a probability zero. I'm like,
There's a probability greater than zero that the entire universe will cease to exist while we're doing this show. There's a probability greater than zero that the entire planet of Mars will go through quantum tunneling and show up on your doorstep in the next 5 minutes. There's a certain point where, I mean, you know, you have to say, yeah, I mean, your odds of getting killed on the way home from work are like several orders of magnitude higher than you winning the lottery.
True, but it could still happen.
Yes, it could. But for this, there was the LA Times. I don't know if you played with this. The LA Times did a great little lottery simulator. Did you play with that?
No.
Let me see if I can find it. If you Google LA Times lottery simulator, it'll probably come up. As I type simulator. But the whole idea is basically they give you $100 in free money and then as much more free money as you want to play with it that you can just throw in and see what your returns are. And of course, you know, the odds are, you know, the overall, like, you get back about 10%. So, like, on average, when you do it over many, many times, you get back about 10% of what you put in. But you can go in and you can play and simulate putting in $1 million in lottery tickets and see what you get back.
Okay. And?
It's just fun. Oh, and speaking of which, the winning numbers were just pulled in the last like, 2 seconds.
I know. I'm trying to see if
if you won.
I admit I bought $100 worth of Powerball tickets?
I believe we bought $20 worth.
Okay, so I went
$20 is my limit for, you know, setting fire to money.
I actually thought of buying even more. I mean, I've set fire to a lot more money than that, but I went to $100. So, you know, so anyway, well, apparently it's getting, let's put it this way, it's getting pretty impossible to, there are so, I went to the supermarket like a few minutes, like less than an hour before, you know, they closed, like, you know,
so there were big
being lines. Able to do that. Yeah. And, you know, it was, I mean, wow. There was like this guy that I know that I'm like, I mean, there was a line. There was a line of people. And I got to tell you that I've never seen a line of people, you know, at the over there, like shopping for tickets, you know, and this is the first time I ever saw one.
If you Google LA Times Powerball Simulator, it comes right up. It's the first thing. So just as an example, I'm gonna play my $100 worth, and I guess it okay, quick pick, my $100. Okay, so with my $100, and I guess it reinvested my winnings as well.
Yeah.
Okay. I spent $104 and I won $4 for a total loss of $100.
Okay.
And so now I'm going to tell it, okay, go ahead, do another 1,000. And so it's doing that. Okay, now I spent $1,170. I won 70 for a total loss of $1,100. So anyway.
Well, there you go. That's pretty cool.
Fun stuff. Anyway, we'll that a number of people have gone on about the argument about, you know, tax on stupid people, et cetera, et cetera. With this kind
whatever.
Of stuff.
It's a little fun. I mean, what the hell? Anyway, well, for God's
exactly,
sake.
Exactly. Look, if you're throwing $20 and you can afford it, or you're throwing $100 and you can afford it, and it's basically you're paying the $100 to spend a few minutes fantasizing about what you would do if
yes,
you
got it. That's it.
That's
really?
All.
Really? Of know, course, that's all you're.
Of listen, course, you can look, fantasize about it without buying the ticket too. But you know, whatever.
Come on, that doesn't work. Look, I won't look.
No, I know.
Now,
but here's
the
here's
in my family, we haven't won a $1 million jackpot. Now, if I remember correctly, my grandfather did win in the '60s a $50,000 jackpot.
Yeah.
Which, inflated adjusted, is about $500,000. Not exactly a bad number.
You know,
and I believe that both my grandparents won jackpots in the range of the hundreds of thousands of dollars, inflation adjusted to today.
Yeah,
so,
but you know, there's correlation. Like, the fact that they got lucky doesn't mean
you're
going.
Not saying that it's correlation that I'm going to get from that. What I'm saying is that, you know what, look, it's not even like in the abstract that I kind of know somebody. I had my brother won a jackpot that inflation adjusted right now is $100,000. So, you know, look, I actually know people that have won. So reality is, and I'm like, that's why I'm like, whatever. I'm like, you know,
yes, it's paying for fantasizing about it for a little bit. The problem, the problem with these lotteries isn't from, you know, upper middle class folks who, when the number gets big, throws down $50 or $100 that they can easily afford. The problem comes with poor people who decide that they're going to spend $100 a month because one day their ticket is going to come in. Or $100 a week.
But that's with any gambling whatsoever. Anybody who goes overboard and abuses, like, gambling, you know, and so forth, you know, that happens with any of that.
Well, what they've done when they've looked at statistics of who plays the lottery, who spends a lot of money on this, except when they're super mega jackpots like this, it's, for the most part, people who really shouldn't, who can't really afford it, who are just every week, as part of their habit, always play $30, $40, $50, $100, whatever, And it's just a continuous drag on their income. And, these people shouldn't be doing it.
No, but you know what? If they didn't do that, they'd be boozing it up, or they'd be at the track, or they'd be something.
Way to stereotype there, but yeah.
No, but it's not a stereotype. Look, what I'm saying is that if you have a tendency to go and, like, do those kinds of things, you're going to waste it either on one thing or waste it on something else, is what I'm saying.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, I, on the one hand, I'm like, yeah, those people shouldn't do that. But on the other hand, do I want to prohibit them from doing so?
Right.
I'm not sure. And also, you could make the argument that, okay, well, then, you know, don't outlaw casinos and stuff. But why is the government actually facilitating these things? Because with the government doing it, it is a sort of... It's a tax.
It winds up being a tax.
I mean, it's an optional tax, so it's not really a tax. You're not forced to pay it, but still, it's like.
But a lot of taxes are optional. There are certain things that if you don't use them, there are specific taxes on certain things, and some people don't.
Yeah, like cigarette taxes and such. Yeah, you know,
exactly.
But right. I don't know. It does sort of, rub me a little bit the wrong way that it's. It's sort of a governmental institution that is sort of taking advantage of people who don't know any better, for the most part, to bring in revenue. I mean, hey, it lowers the tax burden for everybody else, but it's still a fairly regressive thing, that impacts not necessarily the right people.
So far as I can tell, I'm not a billionaire, as far as I can tell.
I'm so sad for you. I don't have my tickets, so I can't check it. My wife has them somewhere.
Oh well. So. I'm pretty sure. Like right now, as we've been conversing, I've been checking. I am talking to you right now, and I'm checking the numbers. Like right now, and I can tell you right now, I did not win the billion.
Oh man.
This would have been an incredibly exciting podcast if I had won them.
That would be very interesting. Yes. Yes.
Okay. If you think about it,
And if that happens, I would, I'm not asking for a big cut, but give me enough to retire.
Well, I told you what I was going to do.
I know you're going to start the Curmudgeon Network. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But
that would be,
and I understand it, there's probably about a 95%+ chance that there will be a winner tonight. But if there isn't, then next week it'll be like over 2 billion.
Yes.
Which would be fun.
Yes. I got to admit that nobody wins, I'll go and I'll try again. What the hell?
Anyway. Enough about the silly lottery. And of course, they changed the odds specifically to get it so that this would happen about a year ago. So,
yeah, they lowered
the odds of winning in order to increase the jackpot of numbers. And they knew there was a fairly good chance that within a fairly short amount of time, they'd get up to a trillion. That would be even better.
$1 trillion jackpot. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, a billion.
So it's like, which country do we want to buy?
And so this $1 billion lottery thing is probably now going to be a fairly regular occurrence. Like at least once every other year or something, we're probably going to see
this. It looks very likely, yes, given the odds.
Anyway. Enough about that. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll start talking election 2016, which, of course, is the main topic of the day, the month, and the year. And then we'll do a lightning round where we cover everything else that's going on. We'll be back after this. Dumbo, Okay, we are back.
Okay, so this Powerball thing, like right now, I was trying to talk about
the Powerball.
No. What I was going to say, listen, it appears to have slowed down the internet substantially. I have been trying to get the websites and stuff or whatever. I went to one, and it was like saying we're experiencing a lot of traffic, like right now, because of people like the look, pop, pop, pop. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I mean, it's like, yeah. So anyway, yeah. So I was just.
Twitter's doing fine. Twitter at the moment is doing fine. During the State of the Union last night, which I guess at some point we'll mention briefly in passing, I did notice Twitter slowing down, which was interesting.
Yep.
It was lagging, and it would pause and then catch up and stuff like that. And maybe it was just me, but I suspect it was related to State of the Union traffic. But, you know, whatever. Anyway, so presidential election. Do you want to do Democrats first or Republicans first?
I don't know. Let's go with the Republicans first.
Always fun. So the main thing to say on the Republican side. Well, let's see. Let's hit the specific incidents on thing. Let's see. Trump started advertising for the first time in Iowa and New Hampshire within the last couple weeks. Trump started going after Cruz because Cruz was ahead of him in Iowa.
Still is, apparently.
Not very.
It's like a dead heat.
It's a dead heat. Cruz's lead has evaporated. Right. It's now a dead heat.
It's a dead heat.
Now it depends on how you looked at it. Of course, like if and you know we usually use Real Clear Politics and Real Clear Politics, Cruz at his maximum had about a 5-point lead, between four and five point lead over Trump, and that lead is now down to 0.5%.
Right.
But if you look at pollster's average, Cruz never actually caught up with Trump. And the difference,
that's interesting.
The difference between these two averages is, you know, pollster is much more inclusive and includes more quote unquote low quality polls as well as the high quality polls. So, you know, Real Clear Politics has all the big names. Pollster includes a few more. And we've talked before about how it's actually not clear that the quote unquote high quality polls are always better. So pollsters, you know, may have the right approach here. We won't really know until we start seeing some voting and seeing what happens.
Right.
Pollster has Donald Trump very slightly ahead. But basically, the end result for both of these guys is at the moment, Iowa's a dead heat in the polls. Nationwide doesn't really matter. We always mention it because it's a good overall view of what the country is thinking. But the reality is Iowa's going to happen, then New Hampshire's going to happen, and then everything right. changes based on those.
Right.
And where we are right now is Iowa's a dead heat again.
Yes.
And Iowa is fairly proportional in the way they give out the delegates. And so what that really means is probably Trump and Cruz are going to come out with roughly the same number of delegates out of the race. Somebody's going to claim the mantle of winner and somebody's not. But in the end, it's a delegate race. And if one of them comes out with, if they come out with only a few delegates between them, it's essentially a tie.
Both will claim victory.
It's very possible. Then we got New Hampshire. I didn't want to get dived into the polls. New Hampshire, Trump is still way ahead.
Yes.
Bottom line, Trump is still way ahead in New Hampshire. But the thing is, Trump did this whole citizenship jujitsu thing on Cruz.
Right.
Because this, you know, as soon as Cruz was ahead in Iowa, it's like, okay, well, all he does is say, you know, a lot of people are talking about the citizenship thing and whether Cruz is really eligible. And do you want to actually deal with that? He never actually came out and said, I don't think Cruz is eligible. He did this whole thing where he's talking about, well, people are talking about it. Well, nobody was fucking talking about it until you mentioned
it. He started talking about it.
You know, it had been talked about. I mean, you know, it had been mentioned. It wasn't a topic that anybody was giving any serious attention to, because overall, the consensus legal opinion is he's eligible.
Right.
You know, he was born a citizen, and the common interpretation of natural born is you were born a citizen. There are some legal experts who counter that, no, that's not quite true. You're automatically naturalized in that situation, but that's different than actually being natural born. And to be natural born, you had to be born.
Cruz had a mother, right? Yeah. Who was American citizen, correct?
Yes.
And so, so the argument is, like, if you, you're natural born by virtue, regardless.
Oh, by the way, there was a winner on the Powerball, someone in California.
Whoa!
There you go.
There you
go. Anyway, so moving on. But anyway, the whole thing with this is that without really coming directly out and attacking, doing this sort of oblique thing.
Oh, that would be nice.
Everybody started talking about this thing. It was all over the news, and all of a sudden I saw a few polls over last week that said, you know, a lot of Republicans actually had no idea that Cruz was born in Canada. You know, those of us who pay close attention knew that, but a lot of people didn't. And a lot of people are going, wait a second, he's fucking Canadian.
Oh, God. Well, I guess none of those people apparently, followed, the last campaign where, McCain was born in the Panama Canal Zone. I guess they didn't realize that either.
That was a couple campaigns ago, but yep.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, and so there are a lot of people sort of, apparently, I mean, this, you know, Cruz peaked and started dropping again almost exactly when Trump brought this shit up. Now, it's hard to give a cause and effect. He might have been peaking anyway.
Right.
But it's like somebody got close to Trump. Trump goes pop. And all of a sudden, it's all negative all the time. People talking about this thing that, you know, if you look really deeply into it, it's a freaking non-issue. I mean, it should be anyway. But, you know, a lot of people start saying, oh, I don't know. He wasn't what I thought he was. And maybe this, and I don't know, maybe it would get caught up in court. And, you know, like Trump said something earlier today, I believe, says, you know, what do you want to do? He wins the presidency and then the courts determine that he couldn't win. He can't be president. And you just concede it to Hillary. And of course, that's not what would happen. That's not what would happen. But all he has to do is say it. And then you got a whole bunch of people thinking, well, we can't vote for Cruz because we're throwing away our vote, because even if he wins, he can't be president.
Lovely. Well, the other thing. OK, so that was one interesting thing that happened. Just moving to something else regarding interesting about the election. Did you read this? There was an article last week talking about, you know, a lot of the pollsters, and I know we talked a little bit about the polls a little bit, about struggling with the likely voter models.
Yes.
And how they are just how it's like everybody is just given the support that is happening to some of the candidates right now and how the voters are voting that people are really, really struggling with, like, arriving at accurate likely voters. And they keep saying that at this point, until the actual voting happens, they don't know if the modeling they're doing is accurate or not, because they feel that they have made a lot of errors before with this, like right now. What was your take on
We actually talked about this on our show a few weeks ago, that, look, that's the thing right now, is there, you know, people can't do, you can't just call people and take the average of everybody who answers. You're not going to get an accurate poll out of that anymore because there's response bias, because certain groups are more likely to answer the phone than other groups. And so you have to start weighting the results you get so that you try to look at the demographics or other factors. And so if you've got a group that tends to not answer the phone very much and you get somebody actually to answer the phone, well, they count more in your poll than somebody of a group that tends to always answer the phone.
Or even like from the people that are answering the phone, and even for the people that say that supposedly that they will vote.
Right.
So
you've got the demographic weighting, you've got the likely voter screen, and how do you do that? And do you do it through asking them if they're going to vote, or do you do it through voter rolls, or what do you do? There are a whole bunch of different techniques, but the point is that each pollster has to have a model that they build that converts their raw poll results into what they report as the results. Because it's not just the straight math. All of these factors have to go into it. And what that ends up being is that how accurate you end up in the end depends less on on the answers the people give you when you call them than your model that tries to convert that into, well, who's actually going to show up. And absolutely, like, one of the differences that people had in 2012 in their models was how much they expected the voter turnout patterns of 2008 to be repeated in 2012. Same thing when we were looking at 2014. How much is going to be the same, and which people are going to stay home? Because in 2008, Obama mobilized a whole bunch of people to come to the polls that were not known to go to the polls at those same rates previously.
Correct.
And so he overperformed in some ways. And then the folks who expected that to be duplicated in the coming years sort of underestimate. So just all kinds of. It's all about these models, and that's all the secret sauce. That's not necessarily all published either. What you're going to probably see throughout, and you can't even throughout the primary season, you might get some refactoring so that they'll learn something from who turns out in Iowa and New Hampshire, and they'll try to apply that to South Carolina or states further down the line. But even there, like, modeling the primary vote is very hard because of the way it's sort of only dedicated partisans that tend to come, blah, blah, blah. It's smaller numbers generally than a general election. So the primary stuff won't necessarily give a lot of insight into how to model the general election either. So people end up making assumptions in terms of, okay, this is going to be kind of like 2012, but maybe not quite. And here are the things we think might be different. There's a lot of guessing in here, to be honest, beyond just, you know, pure science here. So we'll see how well the polls do. I mean, they've tended.
I guess it's just the main thing is like, so you've got certain people, right, that are trying to do. I mean, I'm seeing like, look. In certain places, right, you need to be a registered Republican in order to be able to vote in the primary.
And in others, you don't
participate in the caucus. Others, you don't. And so that's an issue. So and apparently there seems to be a lot of people, okay, all right, that are supporting Trump that appear to be still registered Democrats, technically. Okay, is one of the articles I was reading. Which kind of makes it like, look, great, beautiful. You like Trump, beautiful, but you're a damn registered Democrat, which may well be mean where you are that you can't freaking vote for Trump in a primary.
And that, again, that all depends. Like, for instance, New Hampshire is an open primary state, and New Hampshire, so anybody can pick whichever primary they want to vote in. So that's not going to be an effect in New Hampshire. I think it is an effect in Iowa. But, you know, the Iowa folks, you know, Iowa and New Hampshire are so prominent and the Get Out the Vote efforts are you know, people in Iowa and New Hampshire know what they have to do. That may not be true when you get to states in March.
Right.
You know, but, you know, by the time we get to March, all kinds of things will be different.
Right.
You know, so whatever. Anyway, the polls are the best we can do.
Right. It's the best we can do. And we've got a lot. I think.
But you have to know the limitations, and you have to know the places where they can go wrong. And as we've talked about, you have to know how quickly they can change, too. You know, we were just talking about, you know, Cruz and Trump here. In the space of 1 week, we went from Cruz being up 5% or so. I'm trying to do to my math. To it being neck and neck again. Now, 5% was not that great a lead, but it looked like, you know, he's trending up. Trump is flat. He's had it. And then, boom, turned around on a dime.
Yep.
That can happen, and we've seen situations, you know, where, I mean, if you remember 2008, when we had Hillary in New Hampshire, there was something like between a 5 and 10 point difference between the last New Hampshire polls and the actual results in New Hampshire, because there was from the postmortems, it seemed a significant part of that was just there was a last minute move that was too late for the polls to catch.
That's right.
And that's on top of all the other errors we were talking about, because guess what? People can fucking change their minds depending on what happens.
Right.
Especially in primaries. Like in the general election, you don't have the group of people who flip back and forth between Republicans and Democrats is relatively small. But in the primaries, you know, where you're talking within a party, it's fairly easy to flip back and forth between candidates, and you can get really sudden movements, you know. So we've got 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, till Iowa, you know. Things may be changing up till the very last moment.
And vote early and often, right?
Vote early. Oh, and speaking of which, Iowa is a caucus system, which you have to show up in person to. Voting has already started in New Hampshire. Like, absentee ballots and stuff are already being sent in.
Oh!
You know, that started several days ago, I believe. Maybe even up to a week. So, voting in the 2016 election cycle has already begun.
Man. Wow.
Yeah. So...
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. Did anything else really interesting on the Republican side? Let's see. There was some talk of, like, you'd talked about Rubio. There are some talks of some moves there, but I'm not really seeing a lot of that. There was a little bit of a resurgence. One interesting, Kasich is actually doing not that badly in New Hampshire.
I saw that. Yes, he's actually freaking like surging there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, where the hell did that come from?
That's right.
You know, Kasich has been fucking nowhere, and all of a sudden
he's like, boom, in like freaking New Hampshire of all places.
He's in third in New Hampshire, and so maybe he gets a bump out of that, like without even winning it, you know, coming in third or maybe even second, all of a sudden people are talking about him after that, you know?
Right.
And this is an example where this is a candidate who's nowhere nationally. He's at 2% nationally.
But he's the man, he's really surged strongly in freaking New Hampshire of all places.
Right. You'll know, like, if it seems like he's actually a threat, you'll know because Trump will do one of his little attacks on him. And then he'll be destroyed and go home crying a few days later. Because, because that's what we're seeing happening in slow motion with Cruise right now. We don't know if it'll work completely yet, because I've seen a couple of places that say, you know, like, look, Cruise is also a bully. He knows how to do this stuff. So, true. Like, there's a little bit of a back and forth between Trump and Cruise where they're sort of circling each other.
Right.
You know, finding the right way to, like, you know, attack but not attack. And try to ding the other person without whatever, you know. It is interesting to watch the whole thing play out. But let's see who else. We've got another debate. In about 24 hours from the time we're recording this, a little bit less.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, Republican debate.
Jeez, my buddy is right. There's as many debates as there are Powerball drawings.
Well, the schedule was once a month.
Okay.
You know, through the essentially the whole primary season.
What network is this thing going to be on?
Oh God, which one? I don't even know which one it's going to be on. I'll have to look it up later. But the big news out of this one is Rand Paul is excluded, based on the poll criteria for this one.
Oh.
And so he was throwing a little fit about that, and there was a new poll that came out right after the deadline. I think it's Fox. I think it might be Fox. Right after the deadline for what was going to be included in this debate. So he's trying to get them to reconsider and include this last thing, which would have put him in it if that poll had been included. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know.
Do-do-do. This is Sam from the future here. The debate was actually on Fox Business Network, and it happened between when we recorded the show and when I'm putting the show together and actually getting it out the door. So you guys may have already seen it or listened to highlights of it. There were a lot of fireworks and interesting things, actually, this debate. Yvonne and I may or may not talk about it next week, depending on what else is going on in the world. But that's it for now. Back to this episode. Do-do-do.
Whatever. I mean, some of these guys need to drop out. I mean, I don't know. That's why
you
think it's going to be past Iowa, really, where we really start getting a whole bunch of people dropping out?
Well, it's looking like that at this point. I mean, like, really, if you made it this far, you can't go three more weeks. You know? Yeah. But, like, and I guess we didn't make this in our prediction show, but sometime last summer, you and I had a bet on how many candidates there would be by the time we got to Iowa, and it looks like you're going to win that. You said there'd still be more than 10 candidates. I said under 10. And we need a couple more people to drop out in the next 2 weeks for me to be
on
there.
I think they're going to at least stretch it to at least Iowa. I mean, if somebody at this point, I would have guessed they would have dropped out, like, already if they were not going to make it to Iowa. But at this point, it's like, what the hell, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even if you don't do anything in the next 3 weeks, so you're not right. spending a lot of money, you might as well, like, hang in there and see how you do. But, you know, in terms of the national polls, here's another thing where why, you know, there were a lot of objections up front to using the national polls for debate inclusion is what we were just talking about Kasich. I mean, Kasich is at 2% nationally. You know,
and now he's right. Now he's surging in frickin' New Hampshire. Yeah.
And I don't know, like, some of the most recent debates have been taking account Iowa and New Hampshire polls as well. So he may be included. But this is one of the reasons why basing it on national polls is sort of like, I don't know, because if somebody's doing crap nationally, but is actually doing fairly decently, you know, in Iowa or New Hampshire, then maybe you shouldn't write them off quite yet, because they may end up getting a boost out of that and doing better going forward.
Well, I think I'm going to go and, like, start calling up Romney again, see if he wants to run.
Yeah, that I think it's you know, the only Romney scenario right now is the contested convention scenario.
That's it. Okay.
Which we'll see how that goes, but I don't know. I'm still feeling fairly good about my Trump prediction here, because he's doing pretty good in Iowa. He's way in the lead in New Hampshire, and there's still no evidence of anybody figuring out a way for, you know, to take that from him. And I don't know, you know, because you keep reading all of the stuff about all of the reasons why he's going to collapse, and he just keeps not doing it.
Well, well, still got time.
Yes, yes, there is still time.
And Gingrich can make a comeback. Who knows?
yeah. The one other thing I'll mention, I'm in the last stages, hopefully, of getting my delegate race coverage on electiongraphs.com ready to go. I obviously have to get it done before Iowa, but I've got all kinds of graphs and charts ready to go to once we actually start getting delegates on the Republican side to see how this is going and see whether we're on track for one of those contested conventions or whether we're building up a leader pretty quickly. So we'll see. Anyway, I think anything else on the Republican side? Bush? Anything to say about Bush? He's actually been surging in New Hampshire as well.
He's dead. He's done. It's over. I don't know what the hell he's doing. I mean, he's done. I mean, unless he thinks he's going to get to a brokered convention, I mean, he's done.
Well, and yeah. Anyway, and the bottom line, remember, in any brokered convention conversations, the key is you need to have three candidates with significant blocks of delegates all the way through to the convention.
Right.
You know, so
it's possible.
It's possible. And of course, you need one
number.
Whoever's in the lead has to have less than 50%. One of the things that we'll start talking about as we get into each of these states is it does matter how the delegates are allocated out. Like, for instance, Iowa, I believe, is pretty close to direct proportional across all of the delegates.
So Iowa and New Hampshire are proportional.
They're both proportional. But unlike Iowa, New Hampshire has a threshold. I believe it's 10%. If you get less than 10%, you get no delegates.
Okay.
So, like, you could see, you know, you're like, right now, if you look at New Hampshire,
you wind up with, like, Kasich, Rubio, Cruz, and Trump.
And nobody else.
And nobody else.
Right.
Okay. Interesting.
Anyway, so, and of course, it's all different on the Democrat. It's whatever. They have separate processes, separate rules on both sides of the fence.
Oh, whatever. It's just like Hillary's going to win.
And speaking of that, let's take a break, and then let's talk about the Democrats. We will be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we are back. So first of all, I confirmed over to break, the threshold in New Hampshire is indeed 10%. In Iowa, they basically round to the nearest delegate. Iowa has 30 delegates, 27 delegates who are determined by the voting, and three, the Republican Party's equivalent of superdelegates. And the 27, you basically just take the popular vote and round to the nearest delegate, and that's what it is. In New Hampshire, you have to have a 10% threshold to get any delegates whatsoever. New Hampshire has Republican Party equivalent of superdelegates and 20 actual delegates. And amongst the candidates who get more than 10%, they allocate the 20 delegates proportionally.
Interesting. Okay. Well,
When you go on down the road, every single state has somewhat different rules about how they do this. Some do it by congressional district. Some do it statewide. Some do this. Some do that. Some do all kinds of weird, strange rules. So, you know, it, it if it ends up being a close thing, then those rules end up making a difference and we'll pay some attention to it. If there's a clear winner, it ends up not mattering because they're the clear winner no matter how you count it. Anyway, Democrats, time to talk about the Democrats. You ended with the last thing with Hillary wins, Hillary wins, Hillary wins, essentially.
Yes, basically.
But in the last week, and only the last week, because like 2 weeks ago, this wasn't even on the horizon when we did our prediction show.
Yeah.
She has lost her lead in Iowa. She was already behind in New Hampshire. Her lead nationwide has slipped to slipped considerably as well.
Doesn't matter.
I agree with you, Anand. I just want to go through the narrative here. So we have at least the possibility here that Clinton could lose both Iowa and New Hampshire. Like right now, she's neck and neck with Sanders in Iowa, and she's fairly clearly behind Sanders in New Hampshire.
Dave, it's like I get it, but it doesn't matter anyway.
You're right. So here's a few things that are in play here. First of all, let's take the first of all, what the hell happened in the last couple weeks that suddenly Sanders is surging? Like, because this race on the Democratic side had essentially been flat for months.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know. The new year, people drank a lot. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
because I mean, basically, if you look at these charts, there'd been basically no movement in all of November and all of
then all of a sudden, boom. Yeah.
I mean, basically, we said it before, the last major movement on the Democratic side was when Biden said he wasn't running.
Right.
Ever since then, it's been static. Nothing much has been changing. A little bouncing up and down, but nothing serious. But then all of a sudden, just, you know, basically since the new year, Sanders has been surging and Clinton has been heading downward again. And in Iowa, New Hampshire, and nationally. So a couple. I'm trying to figure out, like, what are the factors here? One, of course, is that Trump actually has started hitting Hillary in the last couple weeks for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that's been getting a lot of press play, bringing up negative things about the Clinton past bill, etc. We could talk about like the specifics of those, but I don't think they really matter because just like the attack on Cruz, the whole way Trump operates, what the truth is of the situation doesn't actually matter. It doesn't matter if I'm not even making a value judgment on whether or not the things he's bringing up are valid. Some of them
valid, whatever, right?
Some of them maybe, but it doesn't matter because what it's about is changing the tone of the discussion so that even if it's false, the mere fact that these things are being talked about brings doubt into people's minds. Well, you know, what is this thing going on? And is Clinton weak because of these things? Is it going to be a problem further down the line? And even if they're, you know, ostensibly for Hillary and think Trump is the worst thing in the world, suddenly those doubts are in their head and maybe it's affecting them. And of course, nobody's doing those kinds of attacks on Sanders at this point, because why would they?
Yeah, who's going to be attacking Sanders? Exactly. Right.
You know, and meanwhile, there's continuing, like, there was some more, there's been some more email-related stuff sort of bubbling up a little bit in the last couple weeks about, like, an email that was released over the holiday where Clinton actually gave one of her underlings specific instructions to remove the classification information off a piece of something and then forward it in an insecure way. And I haven't looked into it deep enough to know how true that is or not.
Oh, well, I don't think anybody's paying attention to that. I will say that
the whole point of that is, once again, the details don't matter. It's right. More the fact that if it's even in the buzz, if it's in the background information, then it sort of starts, like, weighing down things.
Yeah, I get it, but whatever.
But now to the what we're saying. If Hillary loses Iowa, if Hillary loses New Hampshire, what we're going to see is we're going to see a huge explosion of people talking about how Hillary is doomed. And, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. What's going on? Are we really going to have Sanders as the candidate? Is Biden going to decide to jump in after all? Because, I mean, in the last week, he said he regrets he wasn't able to run. He made some comments that were sort of a backhanded sort of slap at Hillary while promoting Sanders, even in an area he didn't quite endorse Sanders. But anyway, you're going to have all those conversations. But and here's a preview of the delegate stuff I'm talking about that I'll be launching soon on electiongraphs.com. By my count, which combines a few different sources, there's a Wikipedia page with super delegates. There's a 538 has a thing of congressional people who've done endorsements, et cetera, and all of those are super delegates on the Democratic side. There are approximately 15% of the delegates to the Republican the Democratic convention are super delegates who are already known people. It's 700 and some superdelegates. I forget the exact number. I have it right in front of me. Why am I guessing? There are 713 superdelegates on the Democratic side out of a total of 4,380 delegates total. And of those 700 and some, we already have 372 delegates who are who look like they are having. Well, my best estimate of the total number of superdelegates who have already endorsed Clinton, based on numerous sources, is 372, compared to 9 for Sanders and 3 for O'Malley.
Okay.
So 96.88% of superdelegates who have declared a preference so far have gone for Clinton.
Correct.
Now, here's the interesting part where you start getting into delegate bath. That means a little over 8% of the Democrats of the delegates on the Democratic side have already been determined, and almost all of them are for Clinton.
Right.
So what that means at this point, for Sanders to win the nomination, he doesn't have to get 50% of the remaining delegates. He already needs to get 54%. Of all the remaining delegates in order to catch up and win. You know, now, of course, if
some of those could change their mind. Some of them
could change their mind. It's not like bound in stone. If they see Sanders winning, they may change their mind. But the point is, you know, before we even get to Iowa, Clinton already has roughly 8% of the delegates. She's already got a very significant lead. You know, the superdelegates aren't the same as voting, but like as we continue to accumulate delegates, Sanders has to do 23 times better than he's been doing so far in order to catch up with Clinton.
Right.
That's huge.
Now, happening.
Happening. If Hillary does completely implode, there are scenarios that can get you there, but Hillary has a huge advantage coming in. She's got a huge money advantage over Sanders. She's got a huge infrastructure advantage. Sanders, as far as I've seen, has, and this is the smart strategy for where he is, but is so concentrated on Iowa and New Hampshire, he's not got a lot going on in the rest of the country. And so he could win those two and then not really be prepared for the next ones. You know, and so Hillary's still got a huge advantage here. Is it impossible something else to happen? No, it's not impossible. We were talking about, nothing being really impossible at the beginning of the show. But the odds are still long. The odds are still very long to have anything.
Very, like very, very long.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I want to compare, and I actually had not done this before the show, but let's see. By the time we got to Iowa in 2008 when it was the big Hillary Obama thing. You know, I just mentioned Hillary's got like, what was it, 96%, 96.88% of the delegates so far. By comparison, where she was when she got to Iowa, she had a superdelegate advantage, but it was only like 55%.
Right.
Not like 96% when she got to Iowa.
Yeah, this is like really comparatively overwhelming.
Yeah, and she only had like 100 or so superdelegates that had been pledged to her by the time we got to Iowa. She's like running at, you know, multiple times that pace at this point. You know, yeah. So Hillary's got so many advantages still. But, of course, you got to have this meltdown. Because, like, look, it's not interesting to have a race where, okay, Hillary's going to walk away with it. Hillary's going to walk away with it. Hillary's going to walk away with it. So what you get is, like, in the next few weeks, I can guarantee you, when the media bothers to talk about the Democrats at all, because, of course, the exciting part is still the Republicans, they're right. going to talk up the fact of Sanders closing the gap and Hillary's in trouble and what if she loses Iowa and New Hampshire and what does that mean and could Sanders really win this, etc. Because that's the entertaining story, is, oh my God, it's getting close. And just like, you know, as you get towards the general election, I don't care what the polls tell you, in the last few weeks coming up to the election, people are going to be talking about how the gap is closing and it's close. You know, and we don't know what's going to happen. And it's exciting because please tune in and watch our show, you know. yeah. Hillary's still got this.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, Sanders is closing the gap a little bit, but Hillary's still got this. Now, yep. You could always have that disaster. She could always come out and do something stupid.
Possible.
The conservatives I have on Twitter and Facebook are constantly talking about how she's going to be indicted at any moment.
Yeah, whatever.
Of course, the what you call it, the holder or whoever who runs the Justice Department just endorsed her. So.
Yes. So fat chance of that happening. You know,
yeah, I mean, look, you know, I understand you people who think that like Hillary should be in jail for X, Y, or Z, but if there's any chance of happening, it's only going to happen once you get your President Trump in place. It's not going to happen before the
right, exactly, and fat chance of that part happening too. Okay, great.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Once we end up with Trump versus Clinton, we'll talk about that. But the Republican race is still where it's interesting. Clinton's still ahead, but there's going to be a lot of drama. Oh, Alex is here. Yes, you may have that. Anyway, yeah, we're going to have a lot of drama over the next few weeks, and it's going to get amplified a lot. But if you look at the fundamentals, Clinton still has this. But comparing to the Republicans again, if you look at this and the talk about how, well, Trump's got to fall. Trump's way further ahead of his competition than Hillary is against Sanders. So if you think that Hillary's got it and it's pretty solid, you should be thinking that about Trump too.
Different situations.
Yeah, I know. There are some different situations.
I mean, but if I were just to take the numbers, then yes, correct. But different situations, you know.
Yeah. So you. We're done with the Republicans. I was going to ask a Republican question, but we'll save that again for next week. And on the Democratic side, there's no significant chance of a contested convention either.
No.
Not going to happen.
No.
Because maybe you have a Clinton-Sanders race here, but O'Malley's not in the ball game.
Exactly. So it's going to be something straight up.
You need three to keep somebody from being over 50%.
Exactly, and that's not gonna happen. So
yep. And
I mean, it's all nice thinking, whatever makes it entertaining, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and we'll save talking about third parties for a little while, but yeah, they're all the usual entertaining things there. Anything else on these guys before we wrap this up and move on to the lightning round? I think we're dragging it out already. So
no, yeah, we've already dragged it out. We're done.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. We'll do a lightning round. We'll touch on a whole bunch of other things that have been happening in the news the last few weeks, and we'll be back after this.
Information.
Okay. Now, Yvonne said you just dragged yourself in for the show and you didn't have anything prepared, so I presume you have no list. So I'll go.
No, I have nothing. Yep.
Okay. So I'm gonna start with a book. I actually finished a book. It was an audio book a few weeks ago now. It was actually before Christmas, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it on the show. It was Conversations with Myself by Nelson Mandela. Except it wasn't really a book by Nelson Mandela. It was more like transcripts of interviews and letters and other things that he'd done of those sorts. And it was interesting, but I must say I probably would have preferred to actually read his actual autobiography or something that was written in a more traditional format, which is on my list, but I haven't read it. Because it was sort of disjointed this way, because it was like you'd read this letter that he wrote in the 60s, and then there'd be like a transcript of an interview, and then another letter, and then a thing, and they're all sort of little snippets and vignettes of his thoughts and opinions and what was going on with his life, but it wasn't woven into sort of a coherent narrative. It was just sort of snapshots, which made it interesting but not compelling.
So, okay.
So that's my bottom line on that book.
Okay.
Let's see, what else? Along the same lines, I finished a TV show. So I finished...
You finished a TV show. So you mean by that is not an episode.
Not an episode. I don't bother mentioning when I watch episodes of TV here on the show. But I finished an entire series... which was the original Star Trek from the 1960s.
Oh, jeez.
I started it. It took me just under 2 years because, I mean, I don't binge watch and go through everything all at once. I watch an episode here, an episode there. It had three seasons in the 1960s. I started it in March 2014 and finished it just after the new year this year. You know, hey, everybody knows Kirk, Spock, all those folks. Some of it really is fairly dated, but there's some classic moments here and there. There's some really good episodes, a lot of not that great episodes, but you know, it's where that whole thing started, and it was fun to watch the whole thing. I think I had probably seen every single episode before at some point, but I had not watched them sort of systematically, making sure I'd seen all of them and in order and blah, blah, blah. Now, it was, you know, unlike many shows today, you know, there's not like a single, there's not like a narrative arc across each season or the three seasons.
Right.
Like
these are all self-contained episodes.
These are
right.
Standalone episodes. For the most part, you could watch them in a random order. There are a few things where you'd be like, where'd that character come from? Because they just sort of come in and out. But even then, I mean, even when the new characters do show up, that's how they show up anyway. But you'd see people coming and going. You know, so episode order didn't really matter for this kind of series, but it was fun to have watched it. Okay. Next up.
No, can I mention my pet peeve that I had this week, which actually replied on Twitter? Why do people go? This has like happened to me a couple of times the last few months. I've realized, and it drives me irritated. Why, if I disagree with people, do they tell me that I'm not listening to them?
Because, and I replied to you in a way that talked about this, but this is actually fairly clear, because I've been in both sides of this kind of conversation. It's because you believe your argument is so clear and convincing that the only possible explanation for the person on the other side not being convinced that you are right is that they haven't actually understood what you're saying.
Okay, so, but that's not the case. Okay, it's just, I don't understand. I heard what they said. I don't agree with it. Why don't I understand that I heard what you said. I don't agree with it.
See, the problem is you just don't understand well enough, because if you did, you would realize you're wrong.
Oh, boy. Okay. Very interesting.
I mean, you know, that's, you know, basically,
you're telling me that these are people that with whatever argument they've got in their head, they find it incapable that somebody could have a different opinion.
Yeah. I mean, fundamentally, like, usually when you have those kinds of standoffs where they're like, you're just not listening, the person believes that, you know, if you truly understood all of what they were presenting, there is no possible way you could disagree, because it's sort of a logical inevitability. Their conclusion is there's no way to come to any other conclusion from the same set of starting facts that they're coming from. That's why they believe, like, if you still disagree, you must just not understand yet. And maybe if they explain it again in a slightly different way, or maybe if you pay a little bit more attention, you'll get it.
Tell me again the same fucking thing again. I know, and I'm like, okay, it's like, what? You know, I'm like getting, okay, you think just because you keep saying it over and over that you're
dude, you just have to admit you are wrong. You just have to come into these conversations recognizing that you are always the one who's wrong, the other person is right, and then you're set.
I actually at one point just finally gave up and just said, okay, so you just want me to tell you, you're right. Okay, so let me just say, okay, you're right. Okay, what? Because I'm like, I'm not understanding. I'm telling you, I don't agree. I explain why, and yet you keep telling me I'm not listening. Okay. I just don't understand. I think it feels, but sometimes I feel it's a little bit beyond that. I think that people just like think it's like very easy just to say, you know, that you're not listening. Okay. Or something. All right. It just seems like it's an easy phrase to throw out, you know, just because you don't agree with them. Let me not like go through the difficult motions of an argument or whatever, trying to understand what you're kind of arguing. Let me just argue that you're not listening.
There you go. Okay, moving on. Anyway, Yvonne, what the hell is going on with the Chinese stock market?
Look, the Chinese stock market has basically, you know, for the most part, a lot of people call it, it's a big casino. Okay, all right. It really is more of a casino than anything else.
Isn't that true of all stock markets?
Not really. Because the reason why I diverge on that is if you look at the swings in the Chinese stock market up and down, extremely volatile. Number one, okay, far more than our markets. Okay, number one. The second thing is how many people are actually invested in the market is smaller. Okay, percentage-wise of population. And then, you know, you get a lot of people that do it with a lot more leverage and borrowed money and other things and whatever, that it just makes it that it's just far more of a speculative, you know, crazy, you know, Wild West than other more mature markets. So I think that's why you're seeing a lot of those moves up and down. So I mean, there's a lot of worry in China about the domestic economy and other things and whatever, which I think is feeding into it. But at the same time, I just think it's just the nature of, you know, a less mature market that this kinds of swings are going, you know, all over the place.
So they were hitting circuit breakers and then they removed circuit breakers and then they went down. Are we done at this point? This was big news over the time we were doing our two special shows.
Oh, the stocks went down again today. I mean, I don't know.
Is there any reason for us to care if we're not personally invested in Chinese stocks?
You know, the thing is that given the rise and expansion of China and the importance in the global economy, we should be looking at it with some concern, obviously, of what's going on in China, because it does impact us to a certain extent. I just don't think that right now it's to a level of like some people have been calling this is a redux of 2008. And I'm like, hey, no, it just isn't. So, I think it's something to be watched, you know, to see what happens in developments. It's not anything to be – I don't think it's like to be at a level of massive concern at this point. It's just something that is rattling people because it's happening, because China's gotten bigger and, you know, it will, make some concerns – people be concerned, you know, because of it.
Okay.
It's far more important.
Moving on. We had this whole blow up also while we were in our 2 weeks doing special shows between Iran and Saudi Arabia, with Saudi Arabia cutting diplomatic relationships. The Saudis executed a whole bunch of people right after the new year.
Around 50 people.
Firing squad, beheading, whatever they.
They were beheadings.
Some of them were beheadings. Some of them were firing squads, if I understand correctly.
Oh, okay.
But in any case, one of these was a cleric who the Iranians had a special affinity to. And so there were all kinds of protests in Iran. There were people that were, attacking the Saudi embassy, essentially. And so the Saudis basically said, screw that.
I was reading that they actually didn't have that much of an affinity in Iran for the cleric. Okay. But he happened to be a Shiite at the same time. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think they used it more for propaganda more than anything else. The fact that it was, the Saudis executing a Shiite cleric. And, they have been at loggerheads over Yemen, Iraq, ISIL, Syria.
Here's the fundamental thing here. And this is where if you get to sort of the reaction against the Iran deal, if you really probe into it, there's less the actual fear of Iranian nukes than it is once again unleashing Iran as a regional power.
Right.
Because there's a fundamental conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia for who has the most influence in the region. And Iran has essentially been contained for decades due to the sanction regime against them, essentially all the way back to the hostage crisis in Jimmy Carter's administration, although it's been off and on how restrictive that was. And we're with the deal here. Part of it is in exchange for all of the restrictions they're agreeing to on their nuclear program, they essentially start coming out of the cold and being able to wield their influence more openly, having more money to wield their influence. And the natural result of this is, greater conflict between Iran and Saudi. And that's what you're starting to see. Now, part of the, what you hear is, well, how can you possibly be, the Saudis are our friends, the Iranians are evil, and so anything that gives the Iranians more influence is bad a priori. I look at this and saying, neither one of these are like enlightened Western regimes, but come on, the Saudis are pretty fucking bad.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, the Iranians are actually, if you start looking at what's going on, they're actually more modern Western, whatever, you know, there are a lot of natural sympathies towards the West in Iran if you take away the immediacy of the conflict of the last few decades. Iran was one of our big allies before the revolution in the 70s.
Right.
And so there's a lot of interesting dynamics there. And like, I'm not sure if you flat out told me, be friends with one of them, pick Iran or Saudi. I'm not sure Saudi Arabia is my answer.
I know, because I mean, the Saudis, I mean, if you look, I mean, a lot of the 9/11 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia.
A lot of the funding for it came from Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia. You know, I mean, it's not exactly like
there's a lot of evidence.
Islam is far more brutal and repressive.
Yeah.
That I see than any other brand.
The Wahhabists or whatever.
Yes.
Exactly. And you know, there's all kinds of things there where, you know, you look at the Iranians and Saudis on some sort of objective measure of like how close culturally they are to the West. Iran actually wins a lot. Now, that does not necessarily, like I said, it's not like Iran is a liberal democracy. That ain't happening either. But
it sure is hell far more, whatchamacallit, more democratic than Saudi Arabia is.
I mean, their elections are heavily restricted, but they have them.
Yes.
I mean, I guess the Saudis do too, in a way.
But they're more open.
But in any case, like, you could easily make the case they're both bad, you know. And let's not even take sides. Let them do whatever they're going to do. We don't have to be involved there. But I just don't get the people who are running to the defense of the Saudis and saying Iran evil, Saudi good.
No, not at all. There's no way to really say that, you know. So yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I tend to keep coming back to the basic notion that, you know, the Mideast is going to be the Mideast and it's going to do what they want to do. And us being involved in any way, shape or form just in the long run makes it worse. And we should just keep our hands off and say, you know, well, you know, Iran, Saudi Arabia, if you want to have a war, have fun. We'll be watching.
Well, I don't know if I want to say that, but
we should try to prevent there from being a war in the first place, obviously.
Right.
That's obviously the preferred option. But, you know, I wouldn't want, if there's a conflict there, to have... I don't want to be on a side. You know? Whatever. Anyway, all of that kind of stuff sort of mystifies me. And I know all the historic reasons why we're in bed with the Saudis. There's the oil. There's a lot of history there. There's this, there's that. Blah, 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 blah. Whatever. You know.
I understand that as well. But my whole thing is that if I got to, like, right now, I'm, you know, I mean, I've, you know, personally, it's not like, like you said, we're not picking, like, you know, these are not great choices in either of them in terms of being, you know, it's like, guys, oh yeah, let's just be friends with these guys. They're so great.
By the way, I think this is one of those areas where, as much criticism as he gets from certain quarters about it, Obama's trying to walk this tightrope where, you know, he's not trying to vilify one side or another too much.
Right. Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And he's like, look, whatever, guys. not quite, obviously. I mean, he's still officially, the Saudis are our allies and the Iranians aren't and blah, blah, blah. But come on.
So since we're going to have W come back and say that I looked him in the eye and
Yeah, yeah. So since we're talking Iran, I'll jump ahead on my list a little bit to this kerfluffle we had I guess it was only yesterday, where two American Navy boats, small boats, apparently, you know, it's unclear exactly what happened, but they drifted into Iranian territorial waters. The Iranian Coast Guard picked them up, detained them, kept them overnight, and then released them. And
apparently, for some reason, our boats wound up in Iranian territorial waters. That is very clear.
Yes.
And, the reasons why, I heard some mechanical problems, some issue with some kind of breakdown that caused them to actually wind up there.
Yeah, but you know, there were two boats.
Yeah. One could have been helping the other boat because the other boat had a problem. Yeah.
No, I understand.
I mean, I've been in that. Believe me, I boated a lot. I've been in that situation where you wind up, oh, well, the other boat broke. Well, we got to go help the other one. Yeah, and you wind up. There is
certainly the possibility that there was indeed some sort of mechanical breakdown. It's also very, very possible that they really were on a reconnaissance or spy mission or whatever and intentionally going to Iranian waters.
Possible.
The one thing that I have not heard disputed by anybody on the U.S. side who's in a position of actual authority is that we did indeed violate Iranian waters.
Yes.
There was nobody saying the Iranians are full of it. We were in international waters.
Nope. Everybody has said, yep, we absolutely were in their waters.
And so we had this. If you looked at sort of right-wing Twitter right before the State of the Union and I guess on the cable news networks and all this stuff too, there was this huge big thing about, oh my God, Obama has to address this in the State of the Union and this is a big fucking deal and look how the Iranians are pushing us around because they've taken hostages again. It's just like Jimmy Carter. It's just like the 70s. It's blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah, they were released like, you know, they picked them up. Well, like,
there are two things here. First of all, nobody's disputing that we did, in fact, violate their territorial waters.
Right.
Like, if
an Iranian... Yeah, like, imagine if fucking Iranian boats are came, like, freaking, like, within our territorial waters like that. A couple of military boats. Oh, yeah, like, we wouldn't be having them, like, fucking... They'd be in Guantanamo in, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like... And so, okay, they detained the... They took over the boats, they detained the people, they arrested them, essentially. What did you want them to do?
Right.
And meanwhile, these people are saying, like, you know, Obama should be going in there, you know, some of them practically saying Obama should go to war over this and go in with guns blazing and rescue our people and blah, blah, blah. And how dare you let the Iranians boss you around and blah, blah. And it's like, our boat violated their territorial waters. What they did was actually completely and totally legitimate and what you would expect any sovereign nation to do under that circumstance.
And we were apparently
in communication with them through diplomatic channels almost immediately. And almost immediately they were like, yeah, we'll give you your people back. No big deal.
Right. And that was it.
And
done.
That was it. If Obama had gone in, like, making a big deal of this, pounding his fists on the table, it would have only made things worse.
Right.
And, like, you get all these people screaming and wanting that. No, come on. It was a minor issue. And because we've got all kinds of open...
It wasn't turned into some clusterfuck. I mean, no. It was done. It happened. Oh, well, all right. Here are you guys back. Okay, all right, good. Okay.
It was handled in exactly the right way. And, okay, yes, the Iranians took a few pictures and put them on TV about them being detained and such. But like you said, damn right, you know, if that happened in the waters off North Carolina...
Exactly.
It would be all over fucking live CNN.
Right.
Duh.
Anyway. So yeah, there's much ado about nothing.
Okay, next up. Oh, I guess tech for a second. CES happened. Anything we care about?
No.
I didn't think so. It's just nothing.
It's become the most boring show in history. Nothing ever happens.
There's like refrigerators with touch screens.
Yeah, and there's a refrigerator and fucking TV on it. Look, I got a refrigerator on one side. I got the TV on the other end. Why the fuck do I need a fucking TV on the goddamn refrigerator?
There was another refrigerator that had a door that when you clicked the touch screen became transparent so you could see the food inside.
Now that might be cool.
Anyway, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff, but it's like,
come on, give me a break. It's a fucking fridge.
But the other thing about what tends to be shown at CES is there's a lot of, you know, really out there stuff that, you know, the first time you look at it that you're like, okay, that's a cool, like, sort of proof of concept of some sort of technological idea, but there's no way anybody's going to actually fucking use that.
Right.
And a lot of them aren't even actually available. There are a lot of pre-announcements and vaporware and things like that that never become real. There are other things that you can go out and buy tomorrow. But so this, like, I just can't get to the same level of excitement as when somebody, and, you know, Apple, of course, does it most often, but there are all kinds of other companies where they announce, okay, here's our product. You can buy it tomorrow. And it's actually something where you look at it and say, ooh, a cool new phone. Oh, a cool new this. Oh,
yes.
Whatever. Whereas it's like, you know, oh, okay, we've developed our new, you know, hyperdrive drone thing that has this new attachment that can make an egg for you.
Warp drive? Warp drive?
Well, the actual drone one that got you know, the most people making fun of it is somebody made a large drone that could actually fit humans in it to ferry humans around, and people were responding, of course, congratulations, you have invented the helicopter.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I'm like, okay.
Of course, the actual difference is the person in the drone isn't controlling it. It's controlled remotely or autonomously or whatever.
Of course, which that makes you feel so much more comfortable if you're flying in the thing where you can't really control it and you're at the mercy of some other asshole at the controls. Yes, I can see how that would make me feel really comfortable.
Yes, because you're usually the pilot when you're in an aircraft.
Yeah.
I know you have a pilot's license, but usually when you fly, you're not the pilot.
Correct. Yeah, well, but the thing is that given if I'm the only person on the thing.
Yeah, it was a one person drone.
Exactly. Okay. I'm like, you know, I'd like to have some input in what the fuck is going on.
Not just see the guy down below you with a little remote control in their hand.
Yeah, going, oh yeah, let me do you a flip, and you're like, oh.
Anyway, CES sucks. Next up,
yes,
Y'all-Qaeda.
Huh?
These guys in Oregon who took over the building.
Oh, yeah.
What a bunch of loons. I mean, at first, when it first happened, people were like, is this going to be like Waco or Ruby Ridge or something like that? And then quickly became clear that, no, it's just a bunch of fucking idiots.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, at first they were talking about 150 people. Turns out it was closer to 15. They went over and took over the visitor center at some nature reserve, and that was unmanned for the winter, because the park was closed for the winter. And then within like 24 hours, they're putting out appeals for people to send them supplies because they hadn't bothered to bring, like, food with them. Despite the fact that they put out a statement saying they intended to occupy this area for years.
But, yeah, but let's not bring food along that, of course.
Yeah, they brought a couple bags of chips or something.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Well, that's good.
So they put out wish lists saying they wanted snacks. They wanted, like, changes of clothes. They wanted new underwear, some socks, you know, things like that. And so, of course, like, people started mailing them, like, dildos and things.
Well, there you go. That's probably very helpful when you're out there and, like, you know, like, alone, I guess.
And, you know, so there were pictures from inside this compound with basically, like, you know, they brought like some weights so they could work out. They brought a bunch of guns, of course, and you know, a few bags of chips, and that's it.
Of course, it's always good to bring chips along. Yeah, sure.
And there was a lot of sort of things like, look, you know, we had violent police action against a lot of protests last year, and what are we doing against these guys? Because for the most part, the authorities have decided to just wait them out. Like, they're not going in there with guns blazing trying to get these folks out of here. And I understand the people who are saying, well, look, you went in with the police against protesters in Ferguson and against the Occupy movement and all this kind of stuff, but you're leaving these, like, Yahoo hillbillies alone. And I get that that's unfair.
I guess the fact that we did it wrong over there doesn't mean that we should do it wrong over here as well.
Yes, the right answer is we shouldn't have reacted that way in the other scenarios, not that we should react that way here.
Right.
Because this, I mean, yeah, they were like, you know, it's the middle of the fucking winter in the middle of nowhere in some national park or state park or whatever it is, you know, cut the electricity and wait for them to come out. Yeah. But it turns out they're not even blockading them. So they've actually been able to go out to the local, like, Quickie Mart for supplies and then go back.
That's retarded. That's the most retarded occupation in history.
You know, but yeah, at some point when they go to the Quickie Mart, somebody should arrest their asses. But, you know.
Yeah, that's it. This will be over. Yeah.
But of course, they're all like heavily armed. And one of the best pictures to come out of this, and I know we're yammering on and we should wrap it up, but there was a picture at one point of one of these guys who had gone outside the building. And of course, the building is surrounded by reporters at this point. The police aren't there, but it's surrounded by fucking reporters. And so there's one guy who came out. So he's sitting, I guess, in the parking lot in front of the place.
Uh-huh.
With his, like, supply of guns.
Yep.
And he puts a giant blue tarp over himself while he's preparing for the inevitable assault. So he's okay. On live TV on MSNBC under a tarp with his guns.
Well, you know...
And like, and the reporters are like asking him, "So what are you doing under there?" And he's like, "Getting ready when they try. They're not taking me out of here alive." And you're hearing this from under like a blue tarp in the middle of the parking lot, surrounded by reporters.
Like the stupidest fuck thing ever. You know, enough said. Yep. Stupidity.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. We missed a whole lot of stuff in the last 2 weeks. I've got more stuff on my list still, but I think we should cut it now. It's a good place to cut it, right? You have anything else you really want to mention right now? We've got the stuff we haven't mentioned. We haven't mentioned the Obama gun stuff. There's one lagging piece of news from, like, almost a month ago now that I keep meaning to mention but forgetting is Defense Secretary Carter. Turns out he was using his private email.
Buzz, buzz, buzz. Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties. Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Okay, that was interesting.
Weird.
Yep.
Anyway, I was just running through the list of things that we're not talking about.
Yeah, you were talking about Secretary Carter.
Yeah, it turns out he was using personal email for official business for 3 months after the big thing blew up with Clinton and her personal email.
Come on, are you really surprised?
It's like...
Are you really,
really
surprised?
Really?
You're really surprised, like, by these bozos.
When that stuff hits the news, you shut it down that day? No.
Maybe he just thought, no. If I just keep doing it, don't change anything, nobody will notice.
And like, Obama specifically, when that stuff was going on, clarified the guidelines around this and said, nobody in our administration should be doing this. And the guy kept doing it for 3 more months. And by the way, he's still there. So we had that. We had Twitter talking about increasing their character limit to 10,000 characters, which is like 10 pages of text or something.
I mean, which then what that confuses me.
Of course, what they're really talking about, it's not like you'd see the 10,000 characters directly in your timeline. You'd see the first 140 or whatever, and then a more link. But the point is, they want to start capturing that traffic. So instead of clicking a more link to a web page somewhere else on the internet where you've put more extensive content, they want that to be within their garden, so that you click more and you stay within Twitter.
Okay.
Whatever. I think it's idiotic, but whatever. That's all part of Twitter's...
Kind of defeats the whole purpose of Twitter.
Twitter's increasingly desperate attempts to try to figure out something they can change to actually make some money.
Right.
But I like Twitter. Twitter is a crucial part of my daily routine. However, I think they're on a fool's errand if they continue trying to figure out how to make it into a huge Facebook size business.
Yep.
We had, of course, the North Korea nuke explosion.
Yep.
Netflix expanded into a whole bunch of new countries.
Yep, they did.
We had the sex assaults in Germany over New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
We had this new Peach social network. Did you even hear about that one? El Chapo was captured.
They captured El Chapo. Oh, and I heard today that Al Jazeera America is shutting down.
And Sean Penn, of course, interviewed El Chapo and was the reason he got captured. Always fun. Anyway,
And
we had the State of the Union, Nikki Haley. Oh, and while we've been recording, there was a terrorist attack in Jakarta, Indonesia.
Yes, I was seeing the news flashes across about that.
My point of this is just there was a shitload of news. Like, we do two special weeks of shows, and a whole crapload of stuff happens, and we haven't had time to talk about it. We'll maybe talk about more of it next week if we have time, but...
Maybe.
Maybe. There'll be new stuff to talk about.
All right. Okay, we've milked this show long enough. All right.
Thank you, everybody, as usual. Like us on Facebook. We're Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Follow me and Yvonne on Twitter. I'm Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is I-M-B-O-U. We love to hear from you. We love your feedback.
Yes.
Share with your friends. Tell them to listen to. And let us know what you think. And I know this week's show is kind of rambly. But, you know, we have fun.
Well, yeah, we do.
Yeah. And that's it. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.